All righty, we continue. This is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. So Tony Mitchell has been suspended by Alabama after an arrest. He is a freshman defensive back. I'm reading this via AL.com. And we'll get to what Nick Saban had to just say in just a second. But he's been arrested, and they found a ton of pot in his car. And also, was there also a gun here, Hickey, as well?
That's what I read, yes.
Wow. Which, you see a little bit of a different approach that you'll hear from Nick Saban in just a second compared to what happened in Nate Oates, where Nate Oates, in the aftermath of that, when the, not that we got a ton of clarity on what actually happened with Brandon Miller and what he knew, but his involvement in what happened, obviously in a tragic and just an awful situation, a lot of people were turned off by practically Nate Oates basically saying, like, oh, you know, college students will be college students, can't really control what they do away from the facility and things like that. Just wrong place, wrong time, pretty much. Let me ask you this before we play the Saban audio. Saban basically saying that there's no such thing as wrong place, wrong time. Is this all of us looking into this too much and it just comes right after the Nate Oates stuff? Or is that Nick Saban kind of voicing his displeasure about how he's not happy with what happened with the Alabama basketball team and how Nate Oates handled it? And I don't think it affected Nick Saban negatively in anything that he's doing with his program, but it is the university when talking about Alabama. And not that I think he's had to answer anything about it, but maybe someone asked about it, like, how would you handle that with your program, things like that. It seems like, and we'll let you be the judge in just a second, but just seeing the clip circulate online, Saban is annoyed, it appears, like what happened with the Alabama basketball team. I don't think this is just coincidence with the phrase that he used.
Nick Saban is intentional with literally everything he does, and he is the king of eliminating distractions and not saying anything and telling his players not to say anything at any time that would stir up any sort of controversy. So him using the phrase, there's no such thing as a wrong place at the wrong time, he's no dummy. He knows that that's kind of been the calling, or that's been the quote blasted out from Nate Oates about a month ago when he said that, and I think it's intentional.
Let's hear Nick Saban. This was the clip. It was at a press conference, I believe. This was earlier today, Hickey. And let's hear that right now from Coach Nick Saban.
Tony Mitchell has been suspended from the team on all team activities until we gather more information about the situation and what his legal circumstance is. And, guys, everybody's got an opportunity to make choices and decisions. There's no such thing in being at the wrong place at the wrong time. You got to be responsible for who you're with, who you're around, and what you do, who you associate yourself with, and the situations that you put yourself in. So it is what it is, but there is, you know, cause and effect when you make, you know, choices and decisions that put you in bad situations.
Also, I do think this is a heightened awareness from Nick Saban, where, not that Nick Saban really needs to like learn anything from how other coaches deal with situations, Ryan, but the fact that someone at his own university just completely messed up in the way of publicly addressing a very serious matter, you know Nick Saban was not going to get caught just kind of blowing past this or handling this the wrong way publicly.
Well, he's also just, again, part of a mindset thing, and part of the reason why Alabama's been so great for so long, it's like you just hear him basically, you know, holding every single player accountable, not only just no such thing as wrong place, wrong time, but you are responsible for the people you hang out with. Like, again, it may seem small, it may seem inconsequential, but that's a small part of why Alabama is the best dynasty in the modern era of college football, just because it's holding and making sure every little detail on the field and off the field is covered, and Nick Saban does not care whether you are, you know, whether it's not your fault, not your, you know, weed or the gun. It's you're in that situation, you're at fault, you're going to pay the consequence. And again, totally different tune than we've heard from the Alabama basketball coach.
Yeah, all righty, let's get to onsides, offsides right now. Five questions, five answers. Hot take, Hickey, hit it.
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, Hickey, what do you got for me today?
All right, Zach, for the 15th time in Tom Izzo's 28 years at the helm, Michigan State is heading back to the Sweet 16. He has now tied John Calipari for the most Sweet 16 appearances by an active coach. And Sunday's 69-60 upset over Marquette was Izzo's 16th win in the tournament, in which he beat a higher seed, which is the most of any coach all time. Onsides or offsides, Tom Izzo is the best postseason coach in college basketball history.
Just real quickly, I just wanted to just say this one more thing about Tony Mitchell. His vehicle evaded police at 141 miles per hour. Think about that. The vehicle driven by Alabama's freshman defensive back, Tony Mitchell, evaded police at 141 miles per hour before it was later found and stopped by the Holmes County, Florida Sheriff's deputies, wrote in their police report. And the police stated also, just to give you some more specifics of this, more than $7,000 in cash and, Hickey, 226 grams of marijuana was found in the vehicle along with a loaded gun. So, a very much proper response by Nick Saban saying there's no such thing as being in the wrong place at the wrong time when it comes to something like that. So, you ask me, Tom Izzo is the best postseason coach in college basketball. He's tremendous. Every program would love to have Tom Izzo. But when you have what Coach K's done, Dean Smith, Jim Calhoun, John Wooden, just for starters, I can't say, even with how impressive it is with the one championship and the sustained success and how he gets the best out of his talent at Michigan State, that Izzo is the best postseason coach in college basketball history. So I will go offsides on that.
Offside.
All right, on the flip side of the highs in the Big Ten by Michigan State, it is the lows in the Big Ten of Purdue, who became just the second ever one seed to lose to a 16 as they fell to FDU on Friday night. And that makes now three straight tournament losses to a double-digit seed for the Boilermakers. Matt Painter, in his 18 years at the helm at Purdue, has guided the Boilermakers to having a top four seed in the tournament eight different times. Both with those high seeds, he's reached the Elite Eight just one time in his career. Onsides or offsides, Purdue should fire their head coach in Matt Painter.
Don't get me wrong. If I'm a Purdue fan, I'm livid because you've had five losses to double-digit seeded teams since 2011 in the NCAA tournament. VCU, Little Rock, North Texas, St. Peter's, and Fairleigh Dickinson. I'll just ask you, though, this question, Hickey. If you're in the camp of, would you fire him? Who are you getting to replace Matt Painter? Like, Purdue is a solid job, good job. But is it attracting really that big of a name where you're going to be blown away by the hire would be my question.
I mean, if for a guy like John Calipari or Tom Izzo, obviously no. But also, you're going to just run the definition of insanity back again and think that his system is going to work in the tournament? Like, that's, I think it's also taking a risk, like, Purdue's at a level right now where they are kind of in that second tier trying to get to that first tier.
Yeah.
And so there's not exactly, it's hard to find a good coach. Don't get me wrong. But I think with that said, I think it's worth the risk at this point.
I would keep Painter, but he's on a short leash. And I know it's been, hey, five double digit loss or five times you lost a double digit seed since 2011 in the tourney. I would give him another year or two. I know he's been there since 2005. But I just don't know if you got rid of him right now. Who's the name out there that you're going to attract that's really going to move the needle and get you that excited? I understand what you're saying, but right now I think he's going to get another year or two, and I'm okay with that approach. So I would go offsides.
Offside.
Number three.
Speaking of coaching moves, the Big East welcomed two new coaches as both Georgetown and St. John's announced new men to lead their program. The Hoyas poached Providence head coach Ed Cooley.
Which is a tremendous hire.
Yes, who has guided the Friars to seven tournament appearances in the last 9 years.
We talk about likable coaches. Ed Cooley is one of the more likable coaches in college basketball.
Ed Cooley is actually cool. Some coaches try to be cool. Some coaches think they're cool. Ed Cooley is actually cool. Give him credit there. And not only is he cool, he wins, like I said, seven tournament appearances in 9 years.
Should we make that a metric?
The cool factor? I think so.
Like genuine cool.
Would you say cool? I'd say he's a cool guy.
Yes.
I think it's all authentic.
Yes.
I can't think of anyone else right now off the top of my head, but okay. We'll get the cool factor from the Zach Gelb show as we roll on here.
Coolest coaches in college basketball. Give us your call. 855-212-4CBS.
Cooley, speaking of cool, won the Big East regular season title last season. Now, the Red Storm hired Rick Pitino to be their next head coach, as Slick Rick is coming off leading Iona to two tournament appearances in the last 3 years with the Gales. Onside or offside, Zach, St. John's made the better hire compared to Georgetown.
Yeah, I would go on sides. It's just because of the longevity of Pitino and the levels that he's won at. Like, don't get me wrong, Ed Cooley is phenomenal. For most of the coaches, I would say, and most of the jobs, be like, all right, you can't do much better than that. And this is a home run for Georgetown. But you look at the fit at St. John's and that program that needs someone that is just so successful and has been successful everywhere he goes. And it's going to bring so many people back from an alumni standpoint, too. And what you could do in NIL, I do think the St. John's hire is better in the interim. Like, long-term, may end up being Ed Cooley. But right now, I would say it's Pitino is the better hire. But with that being said, there's less of a risk with Ed Cooley. Like, I know what I'm getting at Ed Cooley. Pitino, I know I'm going to get winning. But at what cost it is, and what controversy is it going to come with? So it's close, but I just think the importance for St. John's right now to get the right guy is in a bigger spot than what it is for Georgetown, so I would go on sides.
Who's cooler, Jim Larranaga or Ed Cooley?
Cooley.
Wow, you like Coach L.
I like Larranaga a lot.
All right, good for you, Coach. That's a good compliment. Jim Larranaga, I think I would definitely say cool.
He does have old man swagness, though.
That he does. But Ed Cooley's also dripping swag himself, too.
Yeah, but when Cooley... See, here's the difference. Cooley's a better dancer.
Okay, slight edge. Better hips, more movement, more fluidity. Ed Cooley does get the nod over Coach L. Let's quickly go to the NFL here. The Lions made a splash signing on Sunday, inking former Eagles defensive back C.J. Gardner-Johnson to a one-year deal. Gardner-Johnson last year tied for the NFL lead with 6 interceptions and is now in a prove-it deal in Detroit.
By the way, have you seen how, like, annoyed he is with the whole negotiating scenario? He's throwing a lot of shade at Philadelphia. He's like, oh, yeah, no problem. I love Philadelphia.
With the alleged contract, the multi-year contract offer that seemed to kind of lowball him?
Yeah. And then it's no big deal, no big deal.
Well, if you want to stay and you think you're, you know, you lead the NFL in interceptions, you think you're going to cash in on a payday, and they're sitting there kind of giving you a small deal.
Don't get me wrong.
Frustration.
He's a good player. He's a very good player. Do I have to go all out for C.J. Gardner-Johnson? I would say no.
So Eagles made the right move and not overpaying.
Is that the question?
No. I'm just asking. Off the cuff.
Well,
1 year, $8 million deal. So let's just, you know.
The only thing is, he wouldn't have taken that deal with Philadelphia. And from what I read, the Saints have had contract problems with him as well. That's why he wound up in Philadelphia via trade. So I don't think whatever he's asking for, he's as great as probably where he thinks he is, even though his numbers this year suggest that he's a heck of a football player. Like, no one's saying he's a bad football player, but I think he thinks he's a little bit better than what he actually is.
Thinks his price tag is way higher instead of, you know.
Yes, which I respect that part of people. But the Saints and the Eagles both basically said, go see what you go get. And it's not as if he wound up with this deal that you go, oh my goodness gracious, there's a lot of other teams that are saying we got to go break the bank for him.
Right. 1 year, $8 million deal is not exactly, we'll say, cashing in or making them look bad. That is for sure.
Now, if I'm a team that is not Philadelphia or New Orleans, I am sitting here saying, why the heck were we not interested in C.J. Gardner-Johnson for just 1 year, $8 million? Now, that's fair for those other team fans to question that.
The Lions did get lucky in getting him. They have C.J. Gardner-Johnson. They have picks still in the draft at pick 6 and 18 in the first round. Also still have about $15 million left in cap space, about middle of the road still as we kind of enter into what is now the second week of NFL free agency.
They got Aiden Hutchinson too, stud.
That they do.
We have a great gift with from the Super Bowl where I'm dancing.
That is also true. Big boost for...
That's not as cool as Ed Cooley, by the way, that gift. It's a cool gift, but not as cool as Ed Cooley.
Okay. Well, good for Ed. Ed's really rocketing up the rankings here of coolness. That is for sure in this segment. All right, onsides or offsides? The Lions enter 2023 as the third best team in the NFC.
In the discussion, but right now offsides.
Offsides.
Do you think you could guess who my third team is? Eagles 1, Niners 2.
After the Brandon Cooks and Stephon Gilmore trade, is it the Cowboys?
It was the Cowboys even before that. Just, I know the Cowboys, bare minimum, are going to go win 10, 11 games. They do that. Now, in the postseason, I have zero confidence in them. I look at the Lions. Right now, I would lean they win the division. But if Minnesota wins that division again, it wouldn't surprise anybody. The Lions' defense, even with getting C.J. Gardner-Johnson, they got to take a big step this year. And that's a little concern. And also, Jared Goff was great last year. Great to stretch, but he's really good. Can he repeat that this year? And you take away 17 rushing touchdowns by Jamal Williams? It's a lot of production that you lost out on.
All righty. A little chip on the shoulder for those folks up there in Detroit if you are listening.
Hold on. I just told you I'm picking the Lions to win the division. If anyone in Detroit has a problem with that,
Dan Campbell's right now breaking some whiteboards, fired up hearing you say that.
Don't bite off my kneecap, coach, okay?
Let's finish with some NCAA tournament talk. 16 teams do remain, and parity reigns supreme.
By the way, I'm in a bad mood today.
Why?
So you mentioned Dan Campbell.
Yes.
He's synonymous with a lot of coffee.
Right.
I had to get up very early this morning, and I had a small cup of coffee. You know, it's funny. Early for me. Remember the hours I work. I had to get up at like 7:30 a.m. this morning, and I had to take a train to Long Island. I had to go get a tuxedo for a wedding, and I then had a second cup of coffee at like 11:30. Didn't have another cup of coffee before the start of the show, because I didn't want to have too much caffeine in the system. And I don't know. Just because my routine got thrown off today. I'm just in a groggy mood today.
You're all discombobulated.
Yeah, I'm all thrown off. Coming off a weekend, too. It's a Monday. I could have used those extra, like, 3 hours of sleep.
Well, yeah, thanks to your friend who's having a wedding. Selfish.
Yeah.
You had to go get a tuxedo fitting.
The nerve of him.
Yeah,
thanks a lot, buddy. Get married.
Jeez. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for nothing.
You have no clue to respond to that. I love
it. No, I do
not. That's just me bitching to bitch. We're all entitled to bitching moments. Today's my bitching moment. All right?
Oh, you please have as many as you want. It's your show.
Who's in the newsroom, by the way?
EJ?
Oh, it's EJ. Perfect. Perfect person to have in the newsroom tonight.
Why, are you going to bitch to him?
No. I like EJ a lot. But there's some people when you got to have a newsroom after the show and they just want to talk your ear off for an hour and they talk at 9,000 miles per hour with a lot of energy. I don't need that type of person tonight. I'm trying to just, EJ, how are you? Good. How you been? All right. Perfect. Knicks, good job. Awesome. How things going? When's your next hosting show? Good. And then we're out. Some people that when I leave the newsroom, they're like, is that the greatest show you ever had? How you doing? Like, what's up? They try to have like an hour conversation. Most of the time, they'll have that conversation. Tonight, I'm getting out of here as quick as possible. And I'm going on a long walk home tonight. I need to be with my thoughts tonight. I need to clear the mind.
Jeez. Okay. You all right? I got to be with the thoughts. Jeez. What do you think about life? Contemplating life? Is now the tuxedo rental like just really messing with everything?
You want to know how pathetic my night is tonight?
Sure. Let's hear it.
I'm thinking about the smoothie I'm going to have. The protein shake I'm going to have at about 10:30 after I walk home.
I don't think it's pathetic. What else are you going to do?
Some mangoes, strawberries.
Some London at 10:30 at night.
Spinach, blueberries, a little scoop of peanut butter. Oh, my mother's not happy with you, by the way.
Why? What did I do?
When I went to my folks' house this morning, she was making herself a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. She was using Skippy. She goes, oh, you should take a photo and send the hot take Hickey with this crappy peanut butter takes.
She can have all the Skippy she likes.
And then she said, how is his weak push-up form been?
Oh.
Mama Miguel was taking shots at you today.
I
thought she liked you.
The form, you want to argue about the peanut butter, to each their own. The form, I think, is unassailable.
Well,
that
Ike
form
Feldman,
was pristine.
Who used to work here, who's like, now he does mixed martial arts, and he tries to basically be in the UFC. He was going after your form, too. Still goes after your form.
I think people are just hating to hate.
Which is fair. You're a very hateable person.
You know, I try to be nice. I don't know why. I'm just, you know, minding my own business, doing push-ups when I'm asked to do it. And now people want to attack because they see, I don't want to say anything good because we live in a world where negativity reigns supreme. I'm going to just knock his form just because.
You know what you're turning into?
What is that?
You know, we were talking about, like, who's the most hateable coach in this NCAA tournament? You're like, depending on your views of the situation, it was Nate Oates.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call you Nate Oates here, CBS Sports Radio.
They're just
hating you.
No, that is, I have given people no reason to hate me.
Yeah.
I'm an innocent bystander. Yeah. That's all I am.
Go ahead.
Speaking of the tournament, 16 teams left, 11 different conferences are still represented. The SEC and the Big East both lead the way with 3 teams remaining each. But blue bloods like UNC, obviously didn't even make the tournament, but Kansas out, Duke out, Kentucky out. All 4 of those teams not in the Sweet 16, which is the second time since 1980. Onsides or offsides, you like all the parity that has taken over college basketball.
Yeah, I love it. Now, it doesn't mean that you always enjoy when the blue bloods go down. And I don't root against the blue bloods, but is anyone saying this NCAA tournament sucks? No. So therefore, it's working right now. So I'm all for it on sides. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
All right, you can think around the auto parts where your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. One thing from last year's NCAA tournament, and I've said this before, so this is nothing new. I thought it was disgusting last year how Hickey was actively rooting against Coach K and just this fake outrage and this fake disdain that you have for Mike Krzyzewski. I thought it was comical. It was ridiculous. It was absurd because Coach K has done nothing wrong to Hickey. Like, to any teams that Hickey roots for, he has never done anything that has robbed you of anything. So I thought you were just piling on to join the mob of bleep Coach K. You know, I don't want to see him go out as a champion. And it was always weird to me. So that was on my mind when I was watching Duke go down to Tennessee. And I know a lot of people, right, were annoyed because they had Duke going to the Final Four like me. And I was watching Duke play Tennessee, and they would show the sidelines. And obviously Coach K's not there. It's now John Shire. And John Shire, like, when the game ended, right, goes to the handshake line with Rick Barnes and all that. And I also then went on social media afterwards because when Coach K last year lost, and I know it was different, right, Final Four up against UNC, totally different ball game. But in that whole run, you had people like Hickey that was actively rooting against Coach K. Now Coach K, no longer the head coach, even though I think he said recently on his radio show he talks to John Shire every day, but he doesn't miss coaching whatsoever. You know, like, how believable is that? When you talk to the guy every day, I know how much he's meant to you, and right, he was your player and all that, and he's the first guy to replace you. He's been on your staff and all that. But Hickey, I didn't really see or hear the hatred that people usually have for Duke when Coach K was there and how much they would really enjoy the victory. Am I, you know, or their defeat? Am I that far off here where it did feel bizarre and it did take kind of the appeal that some people have in rooting against Duke away with Coach K no longer being there? It was very bizarre how Duke went down. This did not seem like a team that the entire nation was really rooting against, where it does feel like a lot of years it's Duke against the world.
I would say 97%, roughly, the hatred towards Duke is gone from America because Coach K is gone. Now, if you get a classic Duke, like if you get a classic Grayson Allen back and he's there for 4 years and pulling some of the same shtick,
but
I guess, okay, that Duke hatred is back a little bit, but it's more towards that player than the program.
Grayson Allen's like a small pimple.
I think a lot of the hatred, and myself included, left once Coach K left because you love to hate him and the program as well because they are, you know, one in the same. But now with John Shire, there's no emotions, there's no real feeling one way or another that you have towards John Shire, so the hatred is not the same.
So last year you were embarrassing and you were going out of your way to basically poke fun of an old man who was just trying to retire and was just trying to go out with the victory, and you took a lot of excitement in his failure at the end when he loses to UNC, and you were a little noxious on social media. It was weird. This year, kind of missed it a little bit where I didn't get Hickey kind of celebrating when Duke would lose and they lost to the NCAA tournament. I've never had anything against Duke. I've never had anything against Coach K. It felt like, though, that we were missing something, though, this year.
Well, you don't have a coach that's, you know, not self-aware, that's not, you know, trying to coach other players.
Great.
Not a sore loser when he loses and a preacher when he wins. It takes a lot of the juice away.
I just had no feeling when Duke went down. It was just weird. And I'm like, okay, all right, they lost. They had this really good team that early on in the season didn't look like they were going anywhere. And they got into form, and they had big expectations, and then Tennessee was just that much better. When they went to John Shire, it was like the first time all year where you know that Coach K, right, because he had the whole year-long send-off, so you knew he was retiring. But it was the first time where you kind of looking on the sideline and saying, all right, when's Coach K going to walk down the handshake line and shake hands with Rick Barnes in a loss here?
I think you'll feel the same exact way for Syracuse next year.
Well, here's the difference.
Because
here's the difference on that one. I really dislike Jim Boeheim. I never had any disdain for Coach K. Boeheim, it's more good riddance. But you are right. Next year when I watch Syracuse, I don't think I'll be rooting against Syracuse next year. Here's the one difference, though. Is Boeheim going to the games next year? Like, Coach, I don't think Coach K went to a single game this year.
Oh, he was at games.
Was he?
Oh, he was there.
Are you sure about that?
Yes. Yes. They made a point to show him.
Oh, then was it Roy Williams? No, Roy Williams has been at a bunch of games, too.
Roy Williams at every tournament game, I'm pretty sure, last year.
Yeah. I remember Roy Williams. I don't remember. Coach K was at this NCAA tournament game, right?
I'm not sure. I thought he was. I could be wrong. But I'm pretty sure he's in Greensboro for the ACC tournament. I think he's...
So Coach K finally attended a Duke game for Mike Bray this year when Duke was playing Notre Dame. Because this was a month ago. It says Coach K attends first Duke game since retiring.
Really?
Yeah.
Was he at the ACC tournament?
That I don't know. But I remember when he retired.
He was there.
I remember it was in the summer. He said he doesn't plan to attend Duke games this year. Because I remember we were poking fun at him like, yeah, right. Come on. You're definitely going to be showing up.
This was another. I could have. Maybe I'm totally off base. I could have sworn I thought I saw him like some sort of game recent. Like within like either, maybe not even the NCAA tournament. I thought conference.
Well, I just said.
Tournament it, weekend.
It said Coach K attends first Duke game since retiring. It was about a month ago.
Right. But I'm saying, I don't know if that, you know, he could just be one and done more because Mike Bray was retiring. That was the last time that he was going to see him.
See, here's the problem with you. You have such a hatred for Coach K and you have such an image of Coach K. You start to make up things about Coach K, though.
Well, I mean, it would be very pompous of him to be sitting, you know, first seat right next to the bench every home game to, you know, look at me, look at me, look at me.
For a second, I thought I was just sitting there saying, oh, well, maybe I just missed something this year when I was ever watching Duke. I didn't see much of and Coach
wouldn't
K.
Wouldn't that be classic Coach K?
You know Boeheim, though, who didn't really want to retire, now all of a sudden saying, yep, it's the happiest I've ever been. It's great to be retired. I haven't thought about it and blah, 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 blah. He will be at a bunch of games next year.
I would bet so, and then talk about it on the radio afterwards.
I am, and he's hosting that afternoon show.
Right.
He'll basically be running because he got the other guy fired.
So, yes, he will. I think he'll be very, very well endowed in the Syracuse program going forward.
So you have no hatred of Duke anymore?
Not really, yeah. I know the reason why I picked against him this year is because everyone's like, oh, Final Four, Duke this, Duke that. And that was one game off, but that felt like one of those traps where everyone loves a team and they lose early. But there's no real hatred or joy even when they lost.
So I don't know if Syracuse, right, we got to see how they recruit and right NIL and all that into the transfer portal. If Syracuse has a good team next year, I'd actually be happy. Because the last 2 years they were so bad that it would even make it more of a point known why Coach K was kind of way past it and should have retired years ago. So I'll root for Syracuse next year.
See, I get what you're saying, and it would make Jim Boeheim look worse because now it's like, oh, he's gone, and now
but
the team's
better. But
it
is one of his guys as the coach.
But I will say, because there's so many Syracuse alum in the media,
it would
I
be
will still root against Syracuse.
You know what? That's a great point. I don't find the Duke fan obnoxious, personally. I don't find Duke, like, they've never annoyed me in life. The Syracuse media, you are right. We're all of a sudden, all those cockroaches will start popping up out of nowhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
you know, I take that
Jim
back.
Boeheim is gone. Okay, one less reason to hate Syracuse, but their media and the throngs of media that are around still exist.
Who's your least favorite team in the history of sports?
Oh, jeez. I mean, wow.
For you. Because I think,
wow,
if it was professionally,
so
I think you
tough.
Would say the Patriots. But I do think you show more passion, which I'm not saying you're not passionate about the Colts, but I think you show more passion for college sports.
And that's the thing, like, Michigan's up there because as when I grown up more, my family was huge Notre Dame fans.
Yeah.
That was always a bit of rivalry. Now going to Penn State, that's a bit of rivalry. So Michigan's been there. USC has been there. I hate the Phillies. I hate a lot of Philadelphia sports, so that's up there too.
I think I know Marco's.
I don't know if
team.
I have one. I can't think of one. There's a lot of teams in the top tier.
Marco's least favorite team, am I right in saying, is the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, but I got a lot of hatred for a lot of people, so that just happens to be the top of the list. Eagles aren't far behind.
Well, I didn't say we were going to do a whole show on the people hate.
You hit a buzzword, hate. I got a lot of hate. That I got a lot of.
So, Hickey, if you had to pick one, Marco's is the Red Sox. Yours?
I guess Michigan, just because, like, my hate fluctuates based on how good you are. Like, baseball right now, I hate the Braves, but I've hated the Phillies for a while. And I've hated the Nationals before that. Mm-hmm. Other sports, it fluctuates of who's, you know, competing with the Colts for a while. It's the Patriots. Now, the Colts and the Patriots are nowhere near rivals because both are not very good, but especially the Colts.
Yeah, mine's the Colts. I can't stand the Colts.
So, I will say Michigan, because that's the one that's been with me since day one.
Gotcha. Now, if I had to take the Colts out of it, you know who I hate? I hate this team with a passion. The Pittsburgh Penguins. And I was at that Ranger game over the weekend. It was very good to see them win 6-0. As John Tortorella would say, well, they're two whining superstars. And not really Crosby. It's more so Malkin. I don't know. A lot of people say it's Crosby first. For me, it's more Malkin. But, yeah, I agree with everything John Tortorella said about, what was it, 2012, 2013, whatever that was, about 10 years ago.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Another day is in the books, and we're taking stock of the sports world. It's time to find out who's up and who's down. Let's end the day right and hit the closing bell. Only on The Zach Gelb Show.
I'm going to start off with the negative today, Hickey, because I want to end the show out in a positive way today. I think I need more positivity in my life today. So I'm giving a stock down to Matt Painter, John Calipari, and Shaka Smart. Now, I don't really care for Matt Painter. Like, he's not polarizing to me. He's not someone that I really enjoy to like as a coach or I enjoy to hate. But the other two guys I'm really disappointed in. Like, I'm disappointed in Painter. Don't get me wrong. You lost to a 16 seed, and that is now five times you lost to a double-digit seed since 2011. But I'm usually a big John Calipari fan. And some people tell me John Calipari's overrated. And I'm a big Shaka Smart fan. And Shaka Smart, even though he did a good job with this team this year in year number two at Marquette, the way that we thought we were going to be talking about Shaka Smart when he went on that Final Four run with VCU is very different to the way that we now talk about him in the year of 2023. But when you look at people that could have been coming to New York this week, to not have one of Matt Painter, John Calipari, or Shaka Smart is inconceivable to me. And don't get me wrong. We all know how great Izzo is. We all know how great of a story Kansas State has been. But you look through that, even though I thought Purdue was overrated in the tourney, I would have never thought that neither one of Shaka, Coach Cal, or Painter wouldn't be in New York for the Sweet 16, and neither are there. So give a stock down to all three of those coaches. I'm also giving a stock down to Providence. Now, Ed Cooley just wanted to change the scenery. Why did he want to change the scenery is the big question. Even if there's nothing you really could have done to prevent that, and maybe and probably there are things you could, you now have your coach leave Providence to go to Georgetown. It's not as if Ed Cooley said, oh, I'm taking a bigger job and it's at a conference. That's one thing. Stinks, but you could deal with it. Now you have to see that coach still in your conference, and that's a tough pill to swallow. So give a stock down to a program that we really have lauded the last few years in the Providence Friars. On the other end, we're giving a stock up to St. John's. You knew you had to go get Rick Pitino, and now you have a chance to be successful again. Love the hire by St. John's. Give the Johnnies a stock up. NCAA tournament, Sweet 16, Creighton. Coach McDermott joined us earlier. Early in the year, at one point, they lost six in a row after being projected to win the Big East before the start of the year. A lot of people are out on them. They're now in the Sweet 16. And then the story of Princeton as well. That's going to be a fun matchup. I know, right, 15, they get the win 3 years in a row, then they just destroy Missouri. But in 2020, the Ivy League lost their year. 2020-2021 season because of COVID. Last year, Princeton loses in the Ivy League championship game, don't get to go to the tournament. And a lot of those kids are now not only in the tournament, but taking advantage of that moment, like Ryan Langborg, who joined us earlier. So that is a lot of underrated, not big national storylines, but ones that we like to bring to you. So give a stock up to both Creighton and also Princeton. Dusty May, enjoy the conversation with him earlier. He was a student manager in 2000 at Indiana. And now, he's in the Sweet 16 of Florida Atlantic. What a grind, what a story, and what a journey. Give Dusty May a stock up. Coach Tang, over at Kansas State, was with Scott Drew, who's going to join us tomorrow at Baylor for a bunch of years. That team, Hickey, was projected to finish last. Dead last in the Big 12. And now they're in the Sweet 16 going up against the Sparty Party of Michigan State. That's a great story. Give him a stock up. The two games that I'm most excited for this week, with the matchups that we know, Houston, Miami. And Marcus Sasser is now healthy, which is big, 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 big for Houston. I remember the player for Florida, for Miami, that we all thought was going to be out for the first game of the tournament, and he ends up playing too. Norchad, right? For Miami. And he ends up playing. And then you have Gonzaga and UCLA, which we all remember last time those two teams did play in the NCAA tournament, how that one did go down. So with the Jalen Suggs shot. So to have Gonzaga, UCLA, and Houston, Miami in the Sweet 16, I just love that matchup. So give a stock up to those programs. And then finally, Eric Musselman, that was awesome. Not only do you take down Kansas, but then I always love coaches that aren't button-up coaches. And in this case, he literally went through all of his buttons. His buttons were popping because he took off his shirt and he went crazy as if, Hickey, he was like a 10-year-old kid at the lunch table in school that's going to get detention because he's taking off his shirt and just going crazy, throwing the shirt around as he's like chugging chocolate milk.
I get they took down a one seed in Kansas, but the reaction next weekend, if they go to the Final Four, I can't wait for it because you got to top whatever you just, you know, the going on the scorers table and swinging your shirt.
Remember when he's at Nevada?
You got to body surf.
Remember Nevada? I think it's when he went to the Sweet 16. He's like, Sweet 16! I can't believe it! He was going crazy. You don't remember that?
No.
Oh. That was it?
He's a man who I think one-ups his celebration. So now, how do you one-up taking off your shirt and waving in front of the crowd after beating Kansas? I'd say probably jumping into the crowd.
I think you...
Only though if you go to the Final Four.
I think you need to get sunglasses.
Okay.
And I think you need to go crowd surfing.
So I'm saying, yeah, jump in the crowd surf, shirt mm-hmm. off, maybe the finger up, number one. I think that's the way to celebrate.
Well, this is an annual tradition now, him taking his shirt off in March. He does this every year.
Means he's winning.
He's a heck of a coach. Give him a stock up. All righty, and that's the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Isaiah Wong for the Miami basketball team is going to join us coming up tomorrow. Also, Scott Drew, the head coach of Baylor basketball, will stop by as well. Big thanks today to Dusty May from FAU, Greg McDermott from Creighton, Ryan Langborg from Princeton, and also big thank you to Lorenzo Neal for stopping by as well. Right now, if you had to pick who your NCAA champion is going to be, Hickey, who would it be since you had Arizona, but they got eliminated by Princeton if you didn't hear in the first round of the NCAA tournament?
Oh, I did not know. My champion's dead? I had no idea. I will go with Gonzaga.
Oh, no.
I love the fact they're under the radar. No. First time since 2018 they are not a number one seed, which means the pressure is off. They have championship or deep postseason experience with Drew Timmy. Mark Few's a great coach. We're going with the Zags.
Oh, no.
Let's go. Let's go.
Gonzaga fans, when you lose this year, I apologize in advance.
Well, I picked them on Saturday morning, so they've already won one game. So the curse of me is over.
Don't worry, folks. Just when you start to get confident.
I picked Kansas last year.
You know,
right?
The Hickey Hex is there. I'll stick with my pick before the tourney. Alabama against Texas. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.